Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
I am here today to just go completely off book, off script, to talk about Israeli settlements, particularly the legality of them. I have so much to say. I'm talking without any notes today at all, so I hope that I can sufficiently cover this topic. That being said, before I start, I do want to remind you there are still three hostages in Gaza. They were supposed to be released. They have been murdered, but their bodies were supposed to be released 6 weeks ago. To the surprise of absolutely no one, Hamas has not released these bodies. They need to be sent home to be buried for proper burial with dignity and respect, and so that their families can have closure. That being said, today, I want to talk about the legality of Israeli settlements, particularly because of what happened at Park Avenue Synagogue this week. For those of you who didn't see, I actually can't screen share on YouTube Live, unfortunately, so you'll have to look it up. But basically, it was a vicious, you could call it a protest, I would call it a riot, against Jews as they went into a synagogue to partake in a presentation by Nefesh B'Nefesh. Now, what's Nefesh B'Nefesh? Nefesh B'Nefesh is an organization that helps Jews from America to make aliyah, which means to move to Israel. That's simply what it means. It has nothing to do with settlements, honestly. It just has to do with moving to Israel. But people like Zohran Mamdani, New York mayor-elect Zohran Mamdani, think that all of Israel is a settlement and therefore all of Israel is illegal. This is an absolutely ridiculous sentiment, and I'm going to start there. I'm going to start with the people who just simply don't think that Israel is legitimate, or that it exists on stolen land, or that it has no right, like every other nation on earth, to exist. So let's talk about the facts. There is plenty overwhelming documented archaeological evidence, not to mention historical writings, and if you believe in the Bible, even biblical, that the Jews have lived in what is now called the land of Israel for 3,500 years. So anybody who says that the Jews are not indigenous to Israel and only Arabs are indigenous to Israel, I mean, those are lies that are so easily debunked. It's hardly even funny. It's hashtag funny, not funny, because so are all the other lies and propaganda that are levied every day against the state of Israel. And just so you know, I have comments disabled because I can't stand the anti-Semitic bile that gets thrown at me while I talk. But after this is over, you will be able to leave comments below the video, okay? So just while I'm talking, I can't be distracted by evil comments against me. Okay, so the Jews have lived in Israel for 3,500 years. That is actually undisputed historical fact. And if you want to dispute that, come on, guys. Let's try to get serious about what is fact and what is fiction, because you can't have an honest conversation without acknowledging truth. Okay, so the Jews are a small people, very, very small. There's about 15 million with an M of us in the entire world, okay? About half of whom live in the state of Israel. So how many Muslims are in the world? About 1.5 or more billion. Okay, that's billion with a B. If you don't know how to do the math, just like go on Google and say, how much more is 1.5 billion with a B than 15 million with an M? And you're gonna see just how small the Jewish people are. But we have survived for millennia against all odds, against like nonstop persecution. We rise from the ashes. It's what we do. Okay, so the modern state of Israel, I'm going to skip forward thousands of years from like biblical Israel to modern Israel, starting with the UN partition plan, okay, which originally when the British said that the Jews deserve a state, keeping in mind that the Arabs and Muslims have, it depends on what you consider to be a Muslim state. So let's just say there are Arab states, there's somewhere in the vicinity of 50 to 57 of them, okay? It depends on how you count them. Now, how much land does that take up? That takes up 500 times the amount of land as the tiny Jewish state that the whole entire world is so utterly obsessed with. So first of all, ask yourself why. Why is the world so obsessed with this teeny tiny Jewish state that you could barely find on a map of the Middle East? That this is like the heart of all evil, because all of the Jews are obviously like me, a peace-loving yoga instructor who has advocated for just about every charity you could imagine on earth. Very, very guided by my Jewish morality and principles that I was brought up with, by the way. This is the Jewish way, but I digress. I'm good at digressing. I digress all the time. So let me try to get back on track. When the British had the mandate of Palestine, okay? Now keep in mind that there was never an actual state of Palestine. This was a generic area that was basically meant to refer to an area that was occupied is the wrong word, lived upon, primarily by Jews. That was what the Palestine word referred to. It was a slap in the face to the Jews because of the Philistines that had conquered the Jews many years prior. But if prior to the establishment of the State of Israel, you see things like a Palestinian passport, which Golda Meir held, or you see the Palestinian flag, which happened to have a Star of David on it, or you hear about the Palestinian Philharmonic that was made up of Jews, you'll understand what Palestine actually was before the name was hijacked by Yasser Arafat in the 60s. Okay, so originally, so the Brits had control of this broad area, and they were going to break it up, and they decided that the Jews deserved a state of their own. Okay, the Brits have never been particular friends of the Jews, and I mean particularly now. I mean that's really, really obvious. But they did decide that the Jews needed to have some small area where they could live and defend themselves, particularly after the atrocities of the Holocaust. It was very, very important that the Jews had a place where they can call home, be safe, and defend themselves. Now, it made a lot of sense that that place should be the place where Jews have lived for 3,500 years. And in fact, I really want to make the point that for the people who are screaming in the streets all over the world for Jews to go home, let me remind you, our home is Israel. It's always been Israel. This is the land where Jews originated. That's why what the Palestinians call the West Bank is actually called Judea and Samaria. Judea and Samaria. Do you hear like a word or a sound in there? Judea. That might imply that perhaps the Jews have always been there because we have been. Now, when the British broke up or decided to break up the British Mandate, they originally, in 1947, created a partition plan that included not just modern-day Israel, that would include the Golan, that would include Judea and Samaria and, yes, Gaza, but also Jordan. Now, since most people can't find Israel on a map, despite the fact that they're so obsessed with this country, you probably can't find Jordan on a map either. But I'll give you a hint. It's to the east of Israel, okay? I recommend looking at it on a map because it's massive. It's massive compared to Israel. So originally, the British were going to give the Jews basically Transjordan, okay, which included all of modern day Jordan plus all the things that I listed that would be considered Israel today. This was a plot of land that was something like five times bigger than the state of Israel, okay? That was the original plan. So if you want to complain that there's more Arabs than Jews, I'm not going to argue that. That's a fact. There are. We already went over that. There are 1.5 billion Arabs in the world and 15 million Jews. Does that mean that Jews do not deserve a state? Because everyone else has a state. There are ethnostates all over the world. But Jews don't deserve this one tiny Jewish state. That seems to be like the basic argument now of people who are not arguing against any other ethnostate. They don't have a problem with Muslim states or Christian states or Buddhist states or Hindu states. They only have a problem with one kind of state. That, my friends, is the Jewish state. What is the crime here? The crime is being Jewish. That's all. So, this Transjordan, this huge piece of land that was going to be given to the Jews, was cut down to Israel, way, 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 way smaller. And then it was cut basically in half from there, saying that, okay, never mind, we'll give 50% of this tiny piece of land to the Jews and 50% to the Arabs. Now, if you're not familiar with history and what happened at that point, the Jews said, yes, we will do anything. We want any nation. We want any state. We just want a place where we can be safe and live as Jews and defend ourselves. That's what somebody who actually wants a state says, okay? The Arab response was no, no, and hell no. The famous three no's. Those weren't the actual famous three no's, but basically they're like, no Jewish state, no peace, no negotiations. We will not do this. And so the Arabs turned down what would have been a Palestinian state. And since then, they've turned down viable offers and very generous offers of Palestinian states at least five times. Now, if the Palestinians really, really, really just wanted a state, wouldn't you think they would take one when it was actually offered to them? Never mind that they actually constitute basically the entire populations of Jordan and of Lebanon, if you want to talk about Palestinian states. Okay, never mind that. Let's just go on the premise that there's meant to be some sort of partition in what is now the land of Israel. Okay, but for those of you who don't know, what happened was Israel said, yes, we will take whatever we can get. The UN voted on it, and they decided that Israel deserved a state, and then the Jews got a state, okay? What was the Arab response? The Arab response was within five hours of Israel declaring independence on May 14th, 1948, the Arabs decided that they would attack and annihilate this brand new Jewish state. Spoiler alert, they failed. It was something of a miracle. You're talking about a country that just threw together a defense mechanism, an army, if you will, based on people who have never fought, and also a lot of actual Holocaust survivors, who, if you've seen a Holocaust survivor, what they look like coming out of the camps, and imagine them being the basis of an army, that just adds a whole nother level of how on earth did Israel win this existential war and every existential war since. Now, I can argue God, because it just seems like miracle over after miracle. But if you don't believe in God, that's fine too. It doesn't matter. The point is that every time Israel has offered a state to the Palestinians in hopes of peace, the only thing that has been reciprocated is war. Literally war. That is how they respond. I hope you've heard by now that in 2005, Israel unilaterally withdrew every single person from Gaza, including buried people. Okay, they took out literally dead people, live people, dead people. They gave Gaza to the Palestinians. What did the Palestinians do with that? First, they voted in Hamas, a terrorist organization, as their leaders. They destroyed the infrastructure that Israel left for them, and they decided that a really good thing would be to start an intifada. Sounds like a really rational response to being basically given a de facto state, which is why Israel has had to close all borders, because if you had terrorists on every border, believe me, you would close your borders too. Don't believe me? Ask Egypt. In fact, go online. Go look at what the Egyptian border with Gaza looks like, and then get back to me on who is creating an open air prison. The fact is that it is rife with terrorists, and the Egyptians want nothing to do with them. They do not want a single one of them in their borders, and there is no reason why Israel should open its borders to terrorists who not only came in to massacre as many people as they could on October 7th, but have vowed that they will do it again, again, and again. Okay, but I digress. Today's conversation is supposed to be about settlements and whether they are legal or illegal. Now, even the word settlements, quite frankly, is a very loaded term. We're talking about Jewish cities, okay? That's what they are. And you don't call the Palestinians in Area A and B settlements, but you call the Jews in Area C settlers. Now, what does that mean, Area A, B, and C? So in Judea and Samaria, there is sort of like a joint responsibility wherein the PA, again, has been basically given jurisdiction over Area A, okay? Israel has been given jurisdiction over Area C. In Area B, the Goldilocks in the middle, there's shared jurisdiction between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. Okay, so for those who claim that there's some sort of apartheid going on, by the way, because the Arabs who live under control of the Palestinian Authority do not have equal rights with Israeli citizens. Do Mexicans have equal rights with American citizens? The people who live under the authority of the PA are not Israeli citizens. Why would they have equal rights? Which, by the way, the 20% of Israel that happens to be Arab Muslim do have equal rights under the law. They have equal voting rights. They get the same education. They get the same medical care. They have all equal rights. Why? Because they're citizens. And how about this? The Jews who live in Area B, remember Area B is a shared jurisdiction, also do not have the same exact rights as citizens of Israel. I don't see anybody complaining about that. The fact is that if you want the rights of a citizen, you have to be a citizen. Okay, that's how citizenship works, not just in Israel, but in any other country on earth. But alas, the world is so obsessed with the double standards where Israel has to do things that no other country has to do, such as open borders. Name the country that has open borders. I'll wait. Again, I have comments turned off on this right now because I can't be distracted by the anti-Semitic vitriol that always gets thrown at me when I talk. But there will be a comment section that opens as soon as this post, as soon as I'm done talking. So feel free to write in there. And I'd love to hear about that country with open borders. And in, I mean, it doesn't even exist. But if this unicorn country existed, I wonder if it would be surrounded on all sides by people who want to kill them, terrorists. Unlikely, but I digress yet again. Let's get back to the topic. So what really has sort of set off this conversation with me is for me today is, as most of you probably saw, I think I mentioned this before, there was this anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic violent demonstration outside of the Park Avenue Synagogue in New York last week, a few days ago, to protest that inside there was a Nefesh B'Nefesh event going on. Nefesh B'Nefesh, for those of you who don't know, you could look this up, is an organization that simply helps Jews move to Israel, American Jews, okay? Anywhere in Israel, Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, doesn't matter, or the settlement, okay, Judea, Samaria, it doesn't matter. It's just to help people who want to go to Israel go to Israel. Now, no irony whatsoever that Zohran Mamdani, who has done everything he can to make sure that Jews feel threatened and unwelcome in his city, who has been endorsed by Governor Hochul, who has made sure that Jews feel completely unsafe, threatened, bullied in her state, which is only one governor in an entire nation that has been threatening and attacking Jews across the country, which is only one country that is part of an entire world that has been absolutely obsessed with this anti-Semitic vitriol that has been doing everything it can to intimidate and bully Jews and to try to humiliate and destroy us and make us disaffect from Israel. Is there any irony lost on the fact that if you want to chase us out of every single country that we would want to go to Israel, the one country on earth, literally the one country on earth today where a Jew can freely live as a Jew without worrying about being attacked for being a Jew, other than the rabid terrorists that aforementioned live on every single border and particularly in Gaza, but also quite frankly in Judea and Samaria, and let's not forget Lebanon, which is effectively ruled and controlled by Hezbollah, a terrorist organization that has no land disputes with Israel and exists exclusively to destroy the Jewish state, which quite frankly is just an aphorism for let's destroy the Jews. You have a problem with me making that kind of analogy? Why do I, as a Jew, have to go out in the streets? I shouldn't even say in the streets. If I go to synagogue on a Saturday, I'm just some random Jew in Los Angeles. Why do I have to go through a metal detector and then bob and weave through security personnel with guns in case somebody comes in because we're Jews? What does that have to do with war? Oh, nothing. It has nothing to do with the war. And by the way, Israel has acted in the same way that any other country that was attacked the way that Israel was attacked on October 7th would. But once again, I digress. So this last week, Zohran Mamdani had a very high-profile meeting with Donald J. Trump. Trump forced him to stand as he sat. Now, you have to understand, this is like a massive power move, by the way. No matter what the bromance seemed to be, I do believe that there was a lot of keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer going on there. Two players playing each other But I also don't think that there is a coincidence in the timing of Trump basically announcing that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to be designated finally as a terrorist organization, just one or two days after meeting Mamdani, whose biggest backers for his campaign happen to be, wait for it, yes, an affiliated organization of the Muslim Brotherhood. That's shocking. Let's see how that plays out. But once again, I digress. When Zohran Mamdani was confronted with the anti-Semitic, brutal anti-Semitic demonstration that occurred right at the doorway of the Park Avenue synagogue as Jews were going in to learn about how to possibly move to Israel, he claimed that this is a violation of international law. So I want to discuss this international law that that he claims is out there. And I can't really cite the law for a reason. It's because it doesn't exist. Okay. So let's start with, I'm going to go back again. UN Resolution 242. Okay. You could look this up once again. UN Resolution 242 is the one that everybody looks at to claim that settlements are illegal. Okay. 242 at best says that the areas in Judea Samaria that Jews live belong to Israel. At worst, it would say that they are disputed territories. There is nothing within this resolution that says that they are illegal outposts. What it says is that Israel and the Palestinians need to negotiate to find a way that Israel can live with secure borders. Okay? So these 67 lines, if they were like really the issue, why was there a war in 67 in the first place? And why was Israel continuously attacked before that? This has nothing to do with 67. The only thing that happened in 67 is it's called sore losers. You attack Israel, expecting to annihilate them. Israel wins the war, gains territory that, by the way, was historically already theirs. The Judea and Samaria was being occupied, if you need to know, by Jordan at the time, by the way. So they regained this territory. So tell me the war where a country fought a defensive war and then was expected to hand back the territory that they won back. The answer is it doesn't exist. Once again, we're talking about double standards. Now, I'm going to insert the word. They are anti-Semitic double standards. Why? Not because you have a problem with Israel. You can have as many problems with Israel as you want. I mean, try to rely on some facts. That's all I'm asking. But it's because when you apply a standard to Israel, the world's only Jewish state, that you do not apply to any other state, that is anti-Semitic hard stop. So Zohran Mamdani says that Nefesh B'Nefesh was having some sort of illegal meeting because it was helping people, or not even helping, they do help, but they were having an informational meeting on what it would take for Jews to leave, in this case, New York, and move to Israel, okay? I could tell you, as a Jew in Los Angeles, I look in horror at what is happening in New York City, and hell to the no if I would ever want to live there under Zohran Mamdani. As bad as it is, it's only going to get worse. And quite frankly, I'm scared to death of what's going to happen in our next mayoral election in Los Angeles. Karen Bass is already a complete dumpster fire of a mayor who does zero to protect the Jewish community. But my guess is that the Muslim Brotherhood is going to put up a Xerox copy of Mamdani in Los Angeles, and let's see how that goes over, because this could be a really, really, really frightening prospect for La La Land. Now, getting back to New York, of course, many Jews, for good reason, are scared to death to live in New York after January 1st. They've already been scared to live in New York. I mean, follow the news. It's horrific what's going on. And by the way, you're going to stand, not you. People are going to stand and call for the death of Jews as they walk into a synagogue to hear a talk about what it means to move to Israel. Now, let's try to put the shoe on the other foot. First of all, show me the protests that are occurring outside of mosques. Never mind, they don't exist, okay? Because everyone's so afraid of being labeled an Islamophobe. That nobody's ever going to do anything that would ever make it seem like they're an Islamophobe. But they have no problem doing anything that shows that they are blatant anti-Semites, okay? Never mind that. But we literally have imams all over America and all over the world who are live streaming their sermons calling for death, not just to the Jews, not just to Israel, not even just to America, but to the entire West. Where are the people outside protesting? They don't exist. Where are the Jews outside protesting that? They absolutely don't exist. Because as Jews, we will demonstrate to defend ourselves, but you are never going to find us protesting outside of a mosque or a church, and particularly calling for death to somebody. And by the way, Nefesh B'Nefesh again is to help people make aliyah, to move to Israel from America. Do they have commensurate type events having to do with moving to Middle Eastern countries? Well, no, not that I know of. Probably for a reason. Nobody would ever want to leave America to go to any Middle Eastern country that is under Islamic rule. There are neutral countries like Dubai and UAE that I could see why people would want to go there. These are very, very moderate countries that, in fact, are part of the Abraham Accords. They are very tolerant compared to the rest of the Middle East. But besides terrorist recruitment events to get people to move and be a part of like ISIS and Taliban and stuff and Al-Qaeda, you don't really have an equivalent of Nefesh B'Nefesh. But I'm telling you that if there were one, if there were mosque events that were telling people how to move back to Somalia, I don't think a single person would ever protest that, for many reasons, but not the least of which is protesting outside of anyone's house of worship is evil. It's just plain evil. This is not about Israel. It never has been about Israel. This is about the Jews. Let me go on. So Zohran Mamdani claims that that an event that is helping people to move from America to Israel goes against international law. This is such an awesome and blatantly fill in the blank. I know you know it. Anti-Semitic claim. There is no international law in a million years that would say that it's illegal for a person, Jew or otherwise, to move to Israel. Okay, so let's take this further. So he backtracked on that and he said, oh no, never mind. I only meant the settlements. Okay, keep in mind, Zohran Mamdani was the co-founder of Students for Justice for Palestine at Bowdoin, however you pronounce it, University, which is an organization that is literally fully committed to destroying the Jewish state, okay, and delegitimizing it. It's why it exists, okay? This guy is an avowed anti-Zionist. And so let's say that, okay, fine. All of a sudden, he's okay with the Jewish state, but just not with the so-called settlements. Okay, let's talk about this. Sorry, I'm going to get comfortable here. First of all, let's say that his claim, and many people's claim, is that it, first of all, the stolen land. Let's talk about stolen land. God, I don't even know where to begin. This goes so deep. Let's talk about stolen land, okay? As previously mentioned, not only is this not stolen land, the partition plan from the British gave Israel to the Jewish people, okay? Meaning the borders, the country. When the Jews moved to Israel, far from stealing the land, they purchased the land, okay? There's difference, okay? If I go into a store and say, I want this shirt or this milk or this iPhone, and then I pay the store to take that thing out of the store, I did not steal that item. I bought that item, okay? I shouldn't have to like give you this lesson in civics, but I really feel like I need to in this day and age because these definitions are becoming so muddled. When the Jews moved to Israel, now keep in mind, there's been a continuous presence of Jews in Israel for 3,500 years. This is undisputed. Okay, those people already had land, they already lived there, but yes, there was a migration, a mass migration into Israel after 1948, after the establishment of the State of Israel for two major reasons. One was the Holocaust, perhaps you've heard of it, but after 6 million Jews were murdered, massacred in the worst possible ways, you think that all of a sudden Europe opened their arms and went, oh, never mind, we actually like you. Hell no. The Jews were not welcome in Europe or, for that matter, America or, for that matter, anywhere, everywhere on earth. Huge quotas were placed on these Jews who were kept in these horrible conditions in European displacement camps, oftentimes for years until they could find a home and, against all odds, a home in Israel. Okay, this was the Jewish dream was to just live in a place where they could be safe, okay? So when these Jews, imagine you just had every single thing stolen from you, including your life, your dignity, your family, all the things, okay? And then you go to Israel, and then the Arab land that the Jews wound up living on was paid for. Okay, if you don't understand the concept of paid versus stolen, please rewind about a minute when I went over that theory. Okay, not only did the Jews pay for the land, but they paid a heavy, heavy premium for it. This was mostly swampland and desert land that nobody wanted, and they paid an extraordinary premium on it. Why? Because they just wanted a place to live and be free and safe, which is still the Zionist dream today. Just leave us the hell alone. Let us live in peace. Now, if you don't understand that sometimes war is necessary for peace when terrorists are coming in and doing the most horrific, barbaric, savage things to your citizens, I mean, that's a discussion for another day and a discussion I've had many, 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 many times. So if you're really interested, check out the rest of my podcast. I go over that ad nauseum. Okay, so this stolen land happens to be land that was not only paid for, but paid for with an extraordinary premium, and none of it was actually stolen, okay? Now, keep in mind, besides the Holocaust survivors, there were also up to 900,000 Jews who were forcefully expelled from throughout the Middle East. Places like Iran, Iraq, you know, name the places, Afghanistan, all the places, okay? 900,000 refugees. I don't see anybody talking about these refugees, so concerned about the Palestinian refugees, who, by the way, all had the chance to stay and live in the State of Israel, and those who did were granted full and equal citizenship and rights, okay? Don't forget that number, folks. 20% of Israel is Arab Muslim, and they all live with equal rights. Do you know what percentage of the Middle East is Jewish outside of Israel? Yes, zero. Zero. You want to talk about the true apartheid? There's, I mean, I think there's like two Jews, literally, I'm not exaggerating. I think there's two Jews left in Syria, for example. And I think there's, there may even be in the low thousands of Jews left in Iran, but they live as dhimmis. These are second-class citizens that basically have to pay extra taxes to live as second-class citizens for the right to live in these countries. So it's nothing even close to what the rights, the full rights Arab Muslims have in Israel. And keep in mind, you want to talk about apartheid, how many Jews live in Palestinian-controlled territories, meaning Area A of Judea and Samaria and Gaza? That answer, folks, is zero, okay? So we're talking about 20% of Israel, about 2 million Arab Muslims who have equal rights versus 0%, zero. I don't have to do the math. You could divide it, add it, subtract it, multiply it. It all comes out to zero. That are allowed to live in so-called Palestinian-controlled territories. Okay, so so Zoran Mamdani says that, okay, never mind. It's not just moving to Israel that's the crime. It's moving to a so-called settlement. Let's assume, by the way, again, there is zero international law that says that. Okay, zero. There isn't one. You could ask him. He won't be able to cite it because it doesn't exist. Sorry, I'm like, I gotta just like get still on my couch, don't I? Okay, so, but I wanna ask you a question, coming back to this concept of double standards that are so pervasive and quite frankly, so evil right now. Tell me again, tell me the one place on earth, one place, just one, just name it, any one, where it is illegal for any group of people other than Jews to move to. Like, could you imagine if they're like, oh, well, it's illegal for a Christian to move to whatever, Afghanistan. It's illegal for a Muslim to move to London. It's, go down the list, okay? The horrifyingly accepted and normalized concept that there should be any areas on earth, even quite frankly, if they're Palestinian controlled, where it would be quote unquote illegal for Jews to move. Like that very concept, if you don't find that offensive, I really think you need to check your morality at the door. Because this is a standard that would never be applied to anyone else ever. Could you imagine if someone's like, oh yeah, no, black people can't move to France, that goes against all international law, okay? It would be just as ludicrous because there is zero international law against Jews moving to Israel, including the settlements. But the offensive nature of just claiming that Jews can only live in certain areas of the world and not other areas is already deeply problematic, okay? I'm worried for New York City because Zoran Mamdani is an avowed anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, anti-Semite, and people are only going to be more and more emboldened to attack Jews, to demonstrate outside of synagogues. Demonstrate is a really nice way of saying riot, to threaten Jews. And, you know, it's sad. It's sad because as an American and as a very, 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 very proud American, I can't add enough verys in there. I'm so blessed and proud and lucky to have been born in this country and to be an American. The fact that I no longer feel welcome in my own country because I believe in a different God is frightening. This is not the America that I grew up in. It is the America that my nieces and nephews are growing up in. And quite frankly, even people who are vehemently opposed to anti-Semitism have accepted it tacitly as just the norm. It just is what it is. We may not like it, but it's totally normal to shut down a city so that you can call for the death of Jews. You know, that it's totally okay for rioters to destroy school property or Grand Central Station or any of the things, as long as the Jews are the target. I mean, did you see, like, I'm sure you've seen, because it's happened a number of times, where the anti-Jewish protests have violently taken over Grand Central Station in New York, and the police are like, yeah, well, can't do anything about it. And they barricade themselves, and they threaten people, and they do all the things, and they call for death, and blah, blah, blah. And then last week, Yosef Haddad and, you know, like a handful of peaceful pro-Israel, I mean, he actually happens to be not Jewish, but Israeli, stood in Grand Central Station with a flag just saying that they stand with Israel, and the police said that they had to leave. Their presence was the threat, okay? The presence of people who stand with Israel. How did we get to this point, by the way? How did we get to this point? On October 7th, Hamas terrorists, joined by thousands of innocent Gazan civilians, live streamed the brutal and absolutely animalistic massacre of, I mean, it wasn't just Jews. It wasn't even just Israelis. In fact, if you don't know, one of the three murdered hostages that are still being kept in captivity, and yeah, stop and think about that. They are literally keeping corpses as hostages in bargaining chips, which, by the way, were supposed to be returned for burial 6 weeks ago now. But that they, in one of those three, is a Thai worker. Okay, Sudi Sthak, in case you couldn't tell by the name, is not Israeli. He's not Jewish. He was just an agricultural worker who came to Israel so that he could send money home to help his family in Thailand. Okay? Hamas is holding his body for ransom. Okay? We're talking about brutal savages. They live streamed the massacres and the brutality with extraordinary glee on October 7th. The world watched and cheered them on. How did we get to this point? I'm not actually saying that because I could answer it. I'm saying it because my head spins every day trying to figure out how the world decided that the good guys were the ones who were murdering Holocaust survivors and their caregivers in their bed, that felt that it was okay to kidnap dozens of children and murder two of them, the B-Bus children, Kfir and Ariel, and their mother, Shiri, with their own bare hands, that these are the good guys? In what world? In what world do you, does the world decide that the bad guys are the people whose massacre was live streamed on live TV? Notice that the Jews are not shutting down the streets calling for death to Gaza, that they're not protesting and intimidating Muslims outside of their mosques. That none of this goes on. Listen to the sermons. Go to any sermon by any rabbi on any Shabbat. I promise you will not hear a single one of them calling for death to anyone. All they ever talk about is peace. That's what we talk about in synagogue, just by the way. What do they talk about in the mosques? They talk about death to Jews. This is like part of their liturgy. This is part of like their religious discourse. Don't take my word for it. I suggest that you listen to Dalia Ziada's conversation with me on the Yoga of War, because she actually is a devout Muslim, and she will tell you what they pray for in the mosque every single Friday and every mosque across the world. Yes, death to the Jews is a prayer or a curse, depending on how you look at it. So, getting back to the actual question at hand, Zohra Mamdani claiming that this was this Park Avenue Nefesh B'Nefesh meeting was somehow went against international law, as, by the way, Donald Trump just sat there and said nothing about that, which was brutally offensive. But I really, really encourage you. We have been programmed in this world to not think for ourselves anymore. We rely on AI to think for us, to come up with answers, to write letters and essays and in articles. And we have bots that take over our social media. And we have media that tells us what to think and schools that are indoctrinating our children. And we are all being taught not to think. I encourage you to try to think. Try to think. Anytime that something comes in your mind against the Jews, just take out the word Jews and put in another word. The Palestinians, the blacks, the gays, the Asians. Doesn't matter. If the sentence rubs you the wrong way when it comes to those different groups, but it doesn't rub you the wrong way when it comes to Jews, maybe start thinking. Ask yourself why. Why these double standards? Why is it okay to call for death to any group? Why would it not be okay for any group of people to live or move to any place on earth? Okay? All of these are accusations of Israeli apartheid. And by the way, if you haven't been to Israel, you have no claims, okay? Anybody who goes to Israel for just 1 minute automatically understands, just by walking around the streets of Name the City, that there is no apartheid. In fact, it is the model of coexistence and equal rights. But when you want to get obsessed with who is excluding whom, Israel is a place where everybody lives in equality and peace. The Middle East is a place where Jews can't live. And by the way, I really have to be honest. I get very frustrated / heartbroken when people are sort of weaponizing what's going on in Sudan, in Nigeria, in order to make the Jewish case, meaning that Christians are being not just slaughtered, but like 300 girls were just abducted, Christian girls, by Muslim terrorists just this last week. Just like what happened with Boko Haram when Obama was in power. I can't name the year, but obviously, between 2016 and 2020, sometime then. I don't see people in the streets calling for death to Nigerians. I don't see people in the streets who, after Ukraine has been relentlessly attacked for 3 years, I don't see people going to like Ukrainian churches and calling for their death or protesting their very existence or their nation. I just don't see it. And then if you want to take truly bad actors, okay, if you want to take bad actors like Iran, like China. Do you know what they're doing with the Yazidis? Like Russia, okay? Like all of these, the Venezuela, all of these countries that have unbelievable human rights abuses. I don't see anybody in the streets calling for death to Venezuelans, for example. Like, not a single person. Like, that would be ridiculous. Or or even to Russians or Chinese. Like, it sounds funny to even say, but people think it's totally normal and okay to riot in the streets calling for Antifada revolution, right? Globalize the Antifada. Again, no matter what Zohran Mamdani wants you to believe, and he wants you to believe a lot of lies, the call for Antifada is a call to kill Jews wherever you find them, okay? Even if we hide behind rocks and trees. I only smile because I know Israel exists. Because I know, nefesh by nefesh, I can go to Israel when the time comes that I no longer feel safe in Los Angeles, and that there is a Jewish state, and that is a miracle. And it's also mandatory, because if I am going to be persecuted, just like in World War II era and in many, 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 many eras before that, simply for being a Jew, well, then the only place that I know that in the long term I am going to be safe and protected, quite sadly, is the Jewish state. So if you don't understand why Jews need a state, then take a look at the news. Take a look at what's going on in our streets, where a Jewish man could walk down the streets of Montreal or London or Paris or Amsterdam or New York and just get clocked because he looks like a Jew, okay? This is a problem. Regardless of what you think about Israel, this is a problem. It's a problem that is not being reckoned with. It's a problem that is being pushed under the rug. It is a problem that is being normalized most ignominiously by the, as a Jew, Jews, for whom I have absolutely zero respect. Jews who think that it shows that they are so extraordinarily virtuous, that have to do this suicidal virtue signaling of saying, we will go ahead and defend those who seek to annihilate us just to prove that we are such good people and open-minded people. No, that is psychotic, like literally psychotic behavior. Okay. If you feel like defending terrorists, okay, Hamas are terrorists. Period, hard stop. Hezbollah, terrorist. Period, hard stop. If you feel like you want to defend those people, then I damn well better see you also defending the Islamic State that beheads Americans. And I'm sure that you are out there defending Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, okay? Because they may seem like bad guys, but if you think Hamas and Hezbollah are good guys, well, I hate to tell you, they're all on the same team. And if you think that a terrorist is a bad guy just because he attacks America instead of Jews, but that a barbaric terrorist that happens to attack Jews is just a freedom fighter, again, you need to check your assumptions at the door. The double standards are evil, they're unfair, they're immoral, and they are not virtuous. And Jews who stand up for the annihilation of Jews are the worst perpetrators of all. Hard stop. It's not just time for Jews to stand up for ourselves and to stand up loudly and proudly, but it's time for all good people to stand for us. If you think that it was okay, or not even okay, if you think that it was mandatory to stand up for Black people during Black Lives Matters, even though you happen to be white, why don't you think it's mandatory to stand up for Jews even though you don't happen to be Jewish? People are disassociated because they feel like they don't have any skin in the game. Well, white people didn't have any skin in the game when we all stood up for the movement for equal rights for people of color. Equal rights isn't even, I don't think, the word. They already had equal rights, but that they should not be persecuted and that they should be lifted up and should always feel as equals within our society. Why? Because they should. Why? Because all people should. Why? Because we are all equal under the laws and also under God, right? This is one nation under God, indivisible. That actually includes Jews, just FYI. So I think that's all I have to say for today because we just crossed over an hour. When I say all I have to say, you know I always have more to say. So please, if you're still with me, check out my Yoga Vore podcast. I have many of literally the world's most leading voices on the show that will explain to you in no uncertain terms just about any topic you can imagine. I've done 85 shows, I think, so far. So they are all informative and you don't have to rely on me for the information. These are all world leaders and experts who come on the show. So I do recommend check out the Yoga Vore podcast. And if you have questions that are respectful, put them in the comments. I will always address them. If you have comments that are vile, reprehensible, threatening, or violent towards me or towards Jews, they will be erased, okay? So let's try to have respect because this is supposed to be a world and a nation that is like based on respect for others and acceptance of others and this broad tapestry that we're all a part of. The Jews are not on the outside of that. We are very much on the inside. We have helped to build this nation. We were at the forefront of every single civil rights fight that has ever existed since the founding of this great nation. And we are tremendous philanthropists. And it's just the inversion of reality and trying to make out Jews who have contributed so much to this nation and this world to be the enemies of the earth is so beyond comprehension. So I'm asking you today to try to be nice. If you think you're a good person, if you really want a virtue signal to the world, A, supporting bloodthirsty terrorists is actually not the way to do that. B, accepting all people is. And yes, that includes the Jews. By the way, for those of you who want shorter podcasts, I know my Yoga Vore podcasts are very long, very extensive, and sometimes they can be pretty intense. You could also check out my second show that I have with Andrew Fox called A Paratrooper and a Yogi Walk into a Bar. Okay, these are super casual conversations of Andrew and I just talking about issues surrounding Israel and anti-Semitism, keeping in mind that Andrew is neither Jewish nor Israeli. He's a British military expert. And so we discuss and don't always agree upon all things Israel. So that's a much more casual show if you want to check out A Paratrooper and a Yogi Walk into a Bar. And if you're more of a reader, go to my Substack, my Shauna Meyerson Substack, where I write very, very short, easy to read, easily digestible commentaries that I am always open to and appreciate. Again, any respectful comments or questions, and I really do reply to everything. I try to keep my eye on all my social media so that everybody's concerns are always addressed. Okay. That being said, thank you for tuning in. If you tuned in late, I hope that you will rewind and watch this whole thing, because there's a lot of really, really, I think, important information. Quick summary. There is no international law against Jews moving to Israel. There's no international law against Jews moving to the so-called settlements in Judea and Samaria, nor is there any law anywhere on the earth that says it's illegal for any group of people to live anywhere on earth, okay? Check your ludicrous assumptions. Make sure they aren't double standards. Double standards are anti-Semitic. I encourage you, start thinking for yourself. Start looking at facts instead of slogans, and you might just be surprised. Oh, and Am Yisrael Chai.